Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows.
Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Super Podcast. I'm your host, Super Marcy. And the subject of this podcast is going to be, why haven't you seen these films? And that basically means the discussion is going to be about films that I don't think have been widely seen. So we're going to open up your eyes to some new films. And I'm joined with a fellow blogger for this podcast, and that would be Sam Inglis from England. Hello.
Hi, Marcy.
How are you?
Been a long time we've been talking about doing this.
Yes, and finally we are. You're joining me for a podcast.
Excellent.
Just to give everyone a bit of background, we know each other by being schmoes at the Joe Blow forums. And
yeah, sorry, I've been there a very long time, and yeah, I'm into my ninth year there now.
Yeah, well, I haven't been at the forum that long, but I've been visiting the website a very, very long time. Yeah, seems everybody I know comes from there, but that's all good because it's a good website. Alrighty. Now, in case people don't really know, as I mentioned, you're a fellow blogger. You've got your own website, like I do, which is all about movies. So yeah, why don't absolutely. You tell us a bit about it? How long have you had it for, and what sort of stuff you've got on there, and of course, what it's called and where we can find it?
Well, 24FPS, which is at 24fps.org.uk these days. It's a relatively new site. I started it about 18 months ago, I guess. But I've been writing about movies online for over 10 years now. I wrote a little bit about this on the site a while back. But to give you a little background, I started when... Yeah, some of my school friends started asking me what movies they should be going to see. I started sending out a little email newsletter every now and then, just with reviews of the masses and masses of stuff I'd seen. And it kind of all grew from there. First website was a college project on GeoCities.
Wow, back in the day of GeoCities.
Back in the day. It's gone now. I wish I'd found it and archived it somewhere. Cause,
yeah, my first websites I've got saved, they were all through GeoCities.
It was really bad. But the content wasn't bad. I was actually, you know, reading them back. Yeah, some of those reviews weren't too shabby. But I like to think my stuff now is better.
Well, I enjoy reading your stuff 10 years now. Practice. Yeah. So, yeah, much like me, you always would get asked about what to see and blah, blah, blah. That's, you know, a lot of the reasons I started just writing stuff, because I used to get asked all the time about what to watch. So easy enough way to get into just writing reviews and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. And also I always liked to write.
Me too.
So it seemed I wasn't very good at writing movies. Tried that a few times. But
you could write about them.
Sorry?
You could write about them.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm better at writing about them than actually writing them. Took a while to figure that out, but it's cool now.
So what kind of things can we find on your website? Because I know recently you've started adding a few different bits and pieces on there.
Yeah, we do a few regular features there. I run something that my brother does, which seems to be a popular feature, called They Make Tom Watch. He's a projectionist. And sometimes he has to watch quite a lot of crap for his job, and he's quite acerbic about it. I write a lot of reviews, longer reviews of cinema releases, and roundups every week called The Week in Movies. We've got a preview post that I just started called Next Week, which kind of previews the stuff that's coming out on DVD and at the cinema. And I've also got a series called Cine Matters, where I essentially expound on a particular area of cinema that's interesting me. The latest one I've written at time of recording has just gone up, and that's called Voting with My Feet, and it's about walking out of movies. which I did on Tuesday.
Okay, well, not to spoil what it was, so everyone can go and have a look and see what you walked out of. All right, so why don't we get right into our podcasting subject? So we've both got like a, well, I don't know if it's be a top five, but at least five movies that we think haven't been seen enough and want to talk about them and give them a bit more exposure, I guess.
Yeah, I've got to say, mine's not a top five or anything. It's just five movies that I think more people should try and see.
Yeah. Well, what we'll do is we'll count them down anyway. So I'll let you go first with I'll just say number five. So hit us with it.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Luckily, I have put my favourite at last, so that's fine. I'm going to start with a film that's actually coming out over here in the UK on the 23rd of April. So I wanted to talk about it because people can get the chance to go and see this one, and I really think they should. It's a Greek film that I saw at the London Film Festival last year called Dogtooth.
Never heard of it.
And what really sort of struck me about it was that I've seen about 7,000 movies in the last 20 years, so you can imagine how often I see something I've never seen before.
Yes.
and Dogtooth was definitely that. It's about this, very insular family who, mother and father, have raised their three children totally inside this house and the fence around it. So they don't know the outside world at all. They don't know music or film. And their parents deliberately misinform them about the world.
Yeah.
So the planes that go overhead, they think are toys that are hung on the sky, literally.
Wow.
And cats are these dangerous animals that can kill you. That's a really disturbing sequence there. And it's a very strange, insular world that it creates, and it does it absolutely brilliantly. The director, Yorgos Lanthimos, God, I hope I pronounced that right. and that will go for all the names in most of these films, by the way. He has a very sort of particular style, sort of Michael Haneke-ish, in that it's very composed and quite cold, which totally obviously suits this world because it makes it very alien. And it's just a very odd film, profoundly strange film, and really something that's very, very different from anything else you'll see. It's quite extreme. It's certainly very difficult at times. The sex in it is, very frank. There's not much actual violence, but there's some really hard content. For example, one of the games that these children play, the eldest daughter is kind of the family doctor, despite the fact that she's been completely misinformed about the body. And one of their games is that they huff anesthetic and the first to wake up wins.
Right.
Stuff like that that is so
that is
odd,
quite odd,
and builds this really bizarre world. I think it's a film that people will, and this is borne out on IMDb, that people will just love or hate.
Yeah,
and I thought it was just it made number two on my top 10 last year when I saw it, because I thought it was really quite unlike anything else I'd seen, which is rare enough in itself, but so well done on all levels. The performances are terrific. And as I said, the direction's really, really interesting.
Yes.
So, yeah, Dogtooth.
And what rating did you give it?
Well, I don't do ratings on the site for the purposes of this. It was a 5 out of 5.
Okay. No problemo. So that was Dogtooth. I'll go with my fifth, I guess. Was really thinking about what kind of movies I wanted to talk about that people might not really have heard of or have seen. And I got to thinking about a movie I watched a couple of years ago, which is called An American Crime. I'm not sure if you've seen it or heard of it yourself.
I have seen it, actually.
Yeah.
I'll keep my powder dry.
I'd seen something similar because it's based on the same story, but I thought this was a stronger film than the other one. And this one stars Ellen Page and Catherine Keener, as they're the two main ones. And it's It's the true story of this girl called Sylvia, who basically she goes to live with this family, and the mother is just a massive bitch, and she basically just tortures the poor girl and ends up locking her in the basement, and all her children and the children from the town basically just come down and torture the girl, and she ends up dying. And then of course it goes to a court case, so the film's split up into, you know, the different parts of getting to know the girl, getting to know the family, why she went to live with these people in the first place, and, you know, the torture she goes through, and then eventually goes to court. This is really a highly disturbing movie, just basically for what they do to the girl. And it was not really that easy to watch, even though this film, I think, was made for TV, but it's out on DVD, of course, so you can find it if you want to watch it. But I thought it was had quite a strong story, and it was pretty close from what I had read about the actual case. So they didn't, I think, veer too much away from what actually happened, and very strong performances. So that's my number five pick for something that if you haven't seen, which you probably haven't, something to check out.
It's interesting because, yeah, I have seen it, and the director is a guy called Tommy O'Haver, whose previous film was this really innocuous guilty pleasure of mine in a teen comedy called Get Over It, which it's so bad that I admit that I quite like that movie, but I just thought that it was kind of a mismatch for me of director and material. I just didn't think that he got the tone of it for me. I mean, there's some tough scenes in it, but it just didn't work for me. Mm. Despite the fact that I really like both Ellen Page and Catherine Keener, I think they're terrific talents, but somehow it didn't quite come together for me.
Mm. Well, that's fair enough. I mean,
I'm interested though in seeing the other film, because I've heard mixed things about it. It's called The Girl Next Door.
Now, it's this the guy that wrote it, and I can't remember his name. He wrote the book, and then they made it into the film. He actually based the book on the story, but it's different time and setting, but it's the same basic thing. And this one is, that movie's probably a lot more brutal, but there were certain things that I just thought this film did a bit better, whereas that one, not so much. I definitely would rate this one higher, because at the time I saw it, I gave it, I think, 4.5 out of 5 for an American crime. I can't remember what I gave the other one, but I just felt this one was a stronger film overall. So yeah, that's my pick. So I'll send it back to you for your fourth one, or your number four.
Great, okay. I assume that you've seen, and a lot of other people have seen, The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's actually two films based on that same true story. Interesting little parallel there. The other one is a German film called Requiem, which I think, again, is a considerably stronger film. I rewatched Requiem before we did this, but I also looked again at Emily Rose, and it was interesting looking at them back to back, because while I don't mind Emily Rose, it just comes off so much flatter, so much weaker compared to Requiem. Because the interesting thing about Requiem is, though it's about a girl who might be possessed, it's absolutely not a horror film.
It's
a realistic drama about this girl, because the other side of it is that she might just be epileptic. And I think Emily Rose kind of makes that decision and says that she was possessed, for me anyway. And Requiem, the great thing about it is it doesn't decide that for you.
Okay.
Is it
left up to your own decision?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the thing that really distinguishes it is the performance of Sandra Huller, who plays the Emily Rose role. She's called Michaela here. And she's a German stage actress. It's her first film. And it's just such an intense performance. Not in the same way that, you know, with all those body contortions that you see Jennifer Carpenter doing in Emily Rose, but just so sort of very rigorously real, both in the scenes where she might be possessed and in the scenes where she's just, you know, being herself at university. And as much as anything, it's about this religious girl kind of discovering herself at a university. And the sort of effect that and the opinion of her family might be having on her. You know, that might be it rather than possession or epilepsy or anything else. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting film about sort of the way religion affects people as well. I think it's a fascinating piece of work. But it just makes a mockery of the Oscars as well. The fact that Sandra Huller, you know, obviously wasn't nominated because, well, she's German, and English language performances generally get nominated at the Oscars, not German language or anything like that. It's just a mockery. Helen Mirren won that year for The Queen, which is fine work in a TV movie, of course, but perfectly decent work. But you see this performance, and the idea that it wasn't up there is just ludicrous. It's just such powerful, real piece of work. And the only award that she won was from my favourite film critic, Mark Kermode, who gave her Best Actress in the awards that he does for the Culture Show every year. But other than that, nothing, which is really sad. All in all, Requiem, terrific film, great performances, and a really interesting take on the horror film. A film with a horror story that isn't a horror film.
Well, I didn't really think Emily Rose was completely horror. It was just a mixture of different genres, really.
Well, it's got that courtroom drama thing running through it. But I think, it deals in, it's got the special effects with, the faces that Emily sees when she's possessed or, epileptic or whatever.
Yeah. So this is like straight drama with the same story. Oh,
yeah, absolutely. There's not a single digital effect in the whole thing.
Okay. Well, it sounds
though it does still deal with those issues.
Well, it sounds interesting. I think I might have to check it out.
I think you'll like it, actually. I really do.
Well, I'll try and track it down at some stage and get back to you on that. So is there a rating that you want to give it or just skip a rating?
That too was definitely a 5 out of 5 for me this time.
Okay.
It's a fantastic film. One of those that, I'm not getting tired of, despite having watched it many times now.
Awesome. All right. So back to me with 4. This is a movie that I only just recently saw, and I've wanted to see it for a long time, but I just couldn't find it. And it's a film called Exotica from 1994, I believe. And I know that I cannot pronounce the director's name, if you want to help me out.
I can have a go. I think it's Atom Egoyan.
I would say that sounds right. I hope it's right. This is only the second film of his I've seen, actually, which I thought I'd seen more of his movies, but apparently I have not. This was a really strange strange movie, but I really, really liked it, and was surprised that a lot of people just generally hadn't even heard of it. So I thought, maybe this will be a good one to talk about. It's hard to explain what it's actually about, because it's about a lot of different things. But the title of the movie is actually like a what would you call it? Like a kind of a strip club, nightclub kind of thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen the film probably in 10 or 12 years.
Yeah, so. Since it came out, probably. It's a weird strip club because the girls just dance with their clothes on and then they kind of take them off later. But, And it's one of the main girls there is Christina, and her ex-boyfriend just basically watches her. It doesn't seem he's over her, and he seems a bit jealous of what she's doing, and she's hanging out with this guy who comes in regularly, and you kind of find out a bit about the guy that comes in. And there's also another dude who he smuggles in, what do you call them, birds, exotic birds. So it's kind of like you got all these different people and their stories kind of mixed together and going back and forth with, like, what happened in the present. You kind of get the idea of what's going on and how these people work. So it's a complex film, and it stars, I'm probably not going to pronounce her name properly, Maya Krishna, is that right? I don't even know. I feel bad because I like her. She plays Christina, the main girl in it. It's actually got a young Sarah Polley in it as well, in a small role.
Sarah Polley, and I think that's the first time I saw her, actually.
Yeah, I didn't know she was in it, and I just saw her. I thought, oh, it's Sarah Polley. It's got Bruce Greenwood as well. He's the guy that goes into the club that Christina dances for every night. And the DJ / ex-boyfriend is played by Elias Koteas, which I'm pronouncing that completely wrong. But he's, like, one of my favourite actors ever. So it was good to see him in another movie, of course. They're, like, the main ones. I can't remember the other guy that's in it, which is bad. He's the this weird little guy who smuggles in the birds, and he's getting audited by the Bruce Greenwood character. So there's stuff going on there, but it's hard to really explain. It's something you just got to sit and watch to kind of understand what's going on. It's useless to, like, just explain the story, but I thought it was just really, really well done. It's just a really beautifully shot movie, and of course everybody's just perfect in it, and it's kind of got a bit of a haunting feel to it as well.
I think I must have seen it when I was about 16, and I was quite disappointed because it was set in a strip club and I was 16.
It's really not
that movie.
Yeah, it's not oh my god, there's boobs everywhere. It's not like Showgirls or anything like that.
But I like Atta McGoyan, and I really should take a look at it again. I want to see that movie again.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it's really good.
Yeah, definitely watch it again, because I think now that you're much older, you'll have a different, it will be different, basically. That's the only way to describe it. It's not, it's going to be some stripper movie with lots of boobs, but no, it's a serious, beautifully done film.
Which is the other Egoyan that you've seen?
Where the Truth Lies.
Right. I was going to tell you to see The Sweet Hereafter.
Yeah, that's one I really want to see. So that's kind of like on my radar.
That's tremendous. I was thinking about doing it for this, actually.
Yeah, that's on my I will eventually see this movie list. I haven't reviewed this movie yet. It's on my backlist of things to review, so it'll be coming up hopefully in the next few weeks. But I gave it, I think, 4 out of 5. So very strong rating from me, and highly recommended. And I'm curious to see his new film, Chloe, which has one of my favourites, Julianne Moore, in it.
Well, you can catch a review of it from London Film Festival on the blog.
Cool. All right, back to you for your number 3.
A bit of a change of pace. I've done two, really quite adult films, and this is one for kids, actually. Bridge to Terabithia.
I haven't seen it.
And that's the thing, because I think a lot of people, it was because it was really mismarketed, and it was kind of marketed as, explicitly as, like, the next thing from the people who did Narnia, and as if it was, this movie about a magical kingdom and, all of that. And that's there, but that's not the movie.
Mm.
It's much more a film about kids and about being a kid, and about friendship. It's about these two, probably 12-year-old kids, Jesse, played by Josh Hutcherson, who's a terrific young actor, and, oh my god, I've forgotten the character name, Leslie, played by Anna Sophia Robb. It's quite late here. Leslie, played by Anna Sophia Robb, who you know, they both got, you know, very vivid imaginations and kind of outcasts at school. And then they kind of become friends. And to escape from the pressures of school, they create this sort of magical kingdom for themselves in the woods behind their house, behind their houses. And it's, you know, it's a film that in that way kind of gets what I remember childhood being like this sort of, I live on a farm. And, you know, we had a den and everything when I was a kid. And, you know, it is kind of everything is this magical world when you're 11. But the thing that really gets me about it is that there's a twist at the end of Act Two. So with about 25 minutes to go, I'm not going to reveal it.
No, please.
But it ripped my heart out.
Oh.
And I don't cry at movies. In the last decade, I've cried at like four movies at the cinema, and I was in pieces when I saw this movie. The last 25 minutes, tears streaming down my face, even today. I was just crying like a little girl. And, you know, every time in those last 25 minutes when you think, oh, okay, I'm done now, you know, that's the last bit I'll have to cry at, you know, there's something else that comes up and you yeah, I'm gone again. And it's a rare movie that can kind of affect particularly me like that anymore. Because again, you know, 7,000 films takes something pretty special to kind of get to me on that level.
Yeah.
Particularly after seeing it over and over. And it does sort of create this magical world, and then when it undermines it, it's just so devastating. That it's really that rare sort of film that really packs an emotional punch. And I will lastly say this about their school. If Zoe Deschanel had been my music teacher, I would probably be in the best band in the world now. Because I'd really have paid attention in those classes. But yes, Zoe Deschanel as the ultimate teacher fantasy as well. So in a kids movie.
Well, I think that right there is a good selling point. So, what would you rate the movie?
I went with a 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I haven't seen it. It didn't look like it was something I would enjoy. But after hearing you talk about it, maybe if it comes up, I'll check it out and see
if I like it. That's the thing. It's not the film that it's advertised as.
That doesn't help, does it?
Really doesn't.
All right. I'll go with my number 3. And I've only seen this movie once because I cannot actually bring myself to watch it again because of the effect that it had on me and just, it's just too difficult to watch again. It's called Lilia Forever, and I would assume you have seen this film.
Yeah.
I cannot pronounce the director's name. I don't know if you want to help me, if you can.
I've actually got a film by him myself as well. Lucas Moodysson.
Moodysson. There we go. I could say Lucas. I wasn't sure how to say the last name. I saw this, probably 6 years ago or so. And it's just stayed with me ever since. And I often think about this movie, just sometimes it might just pop into my head when I see something similar, hear about something similar going on. It's about a young girl who's 16. I think it's Estonia where they live. She lives with her mum who basically doesn't give a shit about her, to put it lightly. Her only friend's like this, I think, 11 or 12-year-old boy, and they kind of just hang out and dreaming about a better life together and, you know, the usual thing that the kids do. And her mum takes off one day and things just get worse for Lilia. And suddenly this young guy comes into her life and he wants to take her away to Sweden. And silly her decides to go with him. And this is where it turns into a film about, I don't really think it's spoiling the film, but it's basically, it turns into a film about the underage sex trade. So she basically is held against her will, and she basically, with the guys there, they pimp her out to old men. And it's probably one of the most just depressing movies that you'll ever watch. But I think it's something that you need to see because this stuff really does go on and you just really feel such an effect by it. And I was just, it ripped my heart out, this movie, and I was just so disturbed and so upset for quite a while after I watched it. I cried. I cried hard.
Yeah, it's kind of unflinching in the way it deals with its subject, and that's something that Mudison does
yeah.
a lot. I mean, A Hole in My Heart, which is the film we followed this with, is also very difficult. But I think what's interesting about Lilia Forever is that it has actually a sort of strangely uplifting ending, despite the fact that it's utterly tragic.
Yeah.
As a film, the ending has a note of hope to it for me, and it's just beautifully shot. I mean, it's such a wonderful image. But I've got to say, I'm with you. I've only seen it the once. I do actually own it in a Mudison box set, and I do have to watch it again because it is extraordinary. And Oksana Akinshina.
Yeah, I was going to say the actress in it, which I can't pronounce her name. She actually had, I think, a small role in, I think it was The Bourne Supremacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone's seen that, it's a girl that's in that movie. She's the main girl in this. She's just absolutely amazing in this movie. Like, yeah, it's hard to talk about, but it's something that I think people need to watch, definitely. Even yes. You just watch it the once, but yeah, you'll feel it. If you ever want to feel something with a movie, you'll definitely feel something with this. And it feels so real and it's so raw as well. And yeah, it's just, it probably is one of the most, you know, sad, depressing films you'll see, but not all movies are happy because real life isn't always happy. So you need movies like this, I think.
No, absolutely. I mean, I know a lot of people who say, you know, why do you watch all these depressing films? Yeah, because depressing things, there's no room for that in storytelling, clearly. Mm.
Yeah.
I don't
just,
get that philosophy.
Just don't watch it on a day where you're actually feeling really depressed because it'll just make you feel worse. Just watch it on a day when you feel normal and you know, that's probably the best way to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's definitely not one for when you're down.
Yeah. So I believe at the time I saw it, I gave it a 5 out of 5 rating. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely worth watching at least once. I mean, I'd rate it there with something like, a movie that I think people should watch, but you probably can only watch once I'd say like maybe Dancer in the Dark or something like that. Something, I mean,
1993.
I haven't seen that, but I just compare it in that way that I've only seen it once, but it's something I still think about, and I think people should see it. You know, you got to take a chance. You might hate it, you might like it. That's just the way it works. So, all right, we'll go for your number two.
Yeah, this is one that I actually kind of picked because I was going to be talking to you as much as anything, because I think it's something you'll find really interesting. Because I know you're kind of into your horror movies. And this is a really strange little horror movie called Valerie and Her Week of Wonders.
Never heard of it. Enlighten me, please.
There's no real reason that you would have. I hadn't, certainly, until, you know, I was swapping DVDs with a friend and I just saw the title and I knew I had to see this movie because it's such a great title and so sort of mysterious and strange. And that's very much what the film is. It's a Czech film from 1969, so easily the oldest I'm talking about today. and it's very, very surreal. And what's interesting about it in one way is that it's one of the very few films that I would say I genuinely do not understand. I've seen it, I think, 4 times now. I still don't know what really happens in it to a certain degree. What I can tell you is it's about the coming of age of this 13-year-old girl, Valerie, and it appears to revolve around her first period in the same way that, say, Ginger Snaps is a werewolf movie that's actually about coming of age. Here it seems to set off all these events revolving around witches and vampires, one of whom is actually her grandmother, another who might be her father, but that's really unclear. It's almost this barrage of imagery, which is kind of what surreal cinema is in a way. It's always trying to kind of create a dreamlike state.
Okay.
And I think this is one of the better evocations, the better versions of that, because it does kind of feel like a fever dream almost. A lot of very strange stuff going on. Like the grandmother is actually a very young actress who's wearing this, very thick white makeup. So she doesn't look old at all. She's just this very young actress, very thick white makeup.
Okay.
And then see her also as the regenerated grandmother and as Valerie's mother, though neither of those may have actually happened. It may just be a dream.
Yeah, okay.
Because there's a certain point where Valerie actually turns to camera and says, "It's okay, this is just a dream."
Right.
I'm dreaming now. And, you could believe it. It's a profoundly odd film. But it's also very beautiful. The director has, the print's quite bad, but the imagery is really, really interesting. Like there's her totally white bedroom, and there's the image of the vampire is very individual as well. He's this sort of white-faced, weaselly character, which I haven't really seen before, except there's a little bit of Nosferatu in it.
Okay.
I probably picked a bad film here because it's so hard to describe. I'm really doing a bad job of selling it to people.
It's all right. It sounds kind of like maybe like an equivalent of something David Lynch would do, almost.
Definitely. Certainly Lost Highway is another of the few films that I really don't understand. And I would put this in that sort of category as far as its surrealism goes. But obviously there's no sort of shared things otherwise, but it's definitely, if you like Lynch,
which I do,
you do,
he's my number one favorite filmmaker.
Fair enough. You should definitely check this out then, because it's very odd, and the director, Jeremy Algiras, is somebody that I'm now really, really interested in on the back of this film. I don't know any of his other stuff. I've heard of one that was banned by the communist regime in Czechoslovakia when it was made, but I haven't seen that. And it's just such an interestingly put together film. Really like somebody filmed the dream state. Very cool.
We've definitely got my interest. I'd say, do you want to rate it? But I doubt you probably can by the sounds of it.
I mean, God knows how. Yeah, I mean, I would just say that it's weird and interesting, I suppose.
That'll do, I think. And what was the title of it again? Valerie.
It's called Valerie and Her Week of Wonders.
Valerie and Her Week of Wonders. Alrighty.
Oh, it's also worth mentioning that it's been used by a lot of different musicians as video backing to this thing called the Valerie Project.
Okay.
Which is about sort of setting music to this film.
Okay. That's interesting.
I know a band called the Shortwave Set have done it. And I like the Shortwave Set, so I've got to find that.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I guess I'll go with my number two pick, and I've gone with a film from last year called Fish Tank. And I know that you're a big fan of this movie as well.
Yeah, I loved it.
Because I think it was one of my buddies from the Empire Australia forums had mentioned it, and I saw it on your website. I was really interested to see it, so I managed to, check it out a few months ago, and I was pretty much blown away by this movie, and I absolutely loved it. We'll go into what it's about. It's about Mia, played by Katie Jarvis. That's better be the right girl.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not getting myself confused. She's a 15-year-old girl. She's... what would be the right way to describe her? She's, I don't know, she's a foul-mouthed young girl.
Yeah, working class, living on an estate.
Yeah.
I think it's Essex that it's set, but I'm not 100%.
Yeah, I think you're right. And her mother is a bit of a, well, her mum's just, she's a young mother who basically doesn't care too much, and she's got a little sister as well, and of course the girls always are arguing and blah blah blah, and I don't think Mia really goes to school, does much of anything. She dreams of basically getting out of where she is, and she wants to be a dancer. She doesn't really have any friends, as you'll see in the first part of the film, and then things kind of change when her mum gets a new boyfriend. I think he's an Irish fella, played by Michael Fassbender. And, well, from the get-go, you know something's going to go on. Yeah, I mean, the character of Mia kind of needs that male in her life, and things kind of happen that probably shouldn't have happened, I guess. And can't really say too much more about it because kind of spoiling the film, I guess, unless I've spoiled too much. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, if you're wondering why maybe the film is called Fish Tank, I kind of took it like this girl is, you know, she's in a fish tank, she can't go anywhere. She feels trapped by everything around her. I guess that's kind of a good way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. And yeah, I mean, it's a really, really beautifully shot movie. It really, you really feel like the, I'm having a hard time trying to explain myself. You feel like the environment that she's in. You kind of, like, some of it is a little bit scummy, and you really kind of feel that. And
yes.
I mean, it feels very, very real. I mean, this, you know, the character of Mia just feels like a real 15-year-old girl. You know, in the situation she was in, I'd probably be a little shit like her. But you can see that she's just longing for something else in her life. And, you know, despite the way she actually kind of just really want to take her in and try and make things better for her. That's, you know, that's kind of how I felt when I was watching it. Even though at times I did want to just give her a bit of a slap across the face. But, you know, well, I also...
towards the end of the film.
Yeah, I also really wanted to just, you know, slap the mother around a little bit, because she's just a cow.
Yeah, she's a massive cow. I think she's kind of the...
She's the reason why her daughter is the way she is.
Yeah, she's the one in the film that it's sort of appropriate to judge more than the other characters, I guess.
Yeah, and the performances all here are just absolutely just phenomenal. I was just so impressed, especially by, you know, Katie Jarvis. Phenomenal performance.
You know the story of how she was discovered, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, I do. And I think that kind of probably helped her a lot with the role of Mia. And, yeah, I mean, I'd like to see her do other things.
Because yeah, I was going to say, I really want to see her in something else so I can tell if it's a really good performance or they just put her on film.
Yeah, but I, you know, just from seeing this, I mean, I would, you know, I think she would be able to pull it off. Well, I'd hope so, anyway.
I mean, I hope it's a really good performance, I've got to say, because otherwise that implies some really bad things about her.
Yeah.
Have you by any chance seen Andrea Arnold's first film?
No, I haven't. I really want to, though.
I was going to say, I think it's better.
I was so impressed by this, and I had a look up and wanted to see what else that she'd done, and I'd heard about Red Road, and something I really wanted to see, so I'm still trying to track that down. I actually read about it in a book that I've got, so, yeah, something else I need to see.
Yeah, it's a great film, actually. And, tougher than Fish Tank, but really great.
But, yeah, I mean, I definitely recommend this movie. I know a lot of people that didn't really like it, but, you know, other people I've seen, like, know that have seen it really liked it, and there's a hell of a lot of people out there didn't like it. I mean, I haven't seen it. I don't know why they didn't like it, so...
That baffles me.
That's their thing, but, you know, I've only only a few people I know have seen it. That's why I kind of wanted to mention it on the podcast, because I think it's something that people should definitely, definitely check out. And this, for me, was 5 out of 5, easily. And I absolutely just am really starting to get into Michael Fassbender. He's just an amazing actor.
Yeah, and, yeah, he's really good,
he
actually.
He was just excellent in this film.
I think he's in Neil Marshall's new film, Centurion.
That I don't know, but, yeah, any time I see his name attached to something, I'll be wanting to check it out. I can tell you that now.
Is that because he's a good actor?
He's an excellent actor, and he's also very easy on the eyes. That also reminds me, I did start to watch Hunger, and I need to finish that movie, which has him in it.
Mm. Yeah.
Just for reference, but my number two pick. So we'll go with your number one, I guess.
My number one. I really have been sort of saving this one up because it's one of my favourite films. It's a film that just keeps getting better every time I watch it. I can't tell you how rare that is. It's actually Lukas Moodysson's first film.
Okay.
And it's known under two titles, the original being Fucking Amal.
Okay.
Amal being the Swedish town that it's set in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of an exclamation of the two main characters. Why do we live in fucking Amal?
Yeah.
It's also known as Show Me Love, but that's such a wet title.
Having fucking in a title just makes it all the more awesome.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's the title that belongs to this film.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't feel like Show Me Love. You know, it's fucking up.
Yeah.
But it's about a couple of Swedish schoolgirls. One named Agnes, who is 16, and she's gay and has a crush on 14-year-old Elin, and sort of from afar. But they kind of end up meeting when Elin, sort of by accident, turns up and ends up being one of only two guests at Agnes' 16th birthday party.
Oh my God, that's so sad.
Yeah, it is. but, you know, Elin's sister dares her to kiss Agnes. And, you know, that kind of starts off this thing between them.
Yeah.
Which is off for most of the film. But it's kind of, you know, Agnes has been in love with Elin from afar, and, you know, now Elin's kind of confused and will they, won't they sort of thing. And they're actually, you know, quite separate for most of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think is really great about it is that, you know, a lot of American teen movies kind of romanticize your teenage years, you know, in a big way. And, I don't know about you, but that's not what I remember being a teenager being like. Yeah.
I'd rather forget being a teenager, but...
Sorry?
I said I'd rather forget being a teenager, but...
Absolutely. You couldn't make me go back to being 16 if you paid me. Hated it. And that's what Fucking Amal does really well.
Yeah.
It's kind of... There's a lot of the sort of petty cruelty of teenagers and... You know, right from the way it starts with this dare for Elin to kiss Agnes.
Yeah.
You know, which is done really out of spite. And the fact that the person who had no friends, and there were plenty of them at school, I remember.
Mm.
Wasn't me, but, you know, some of them. you know, really genuinely had no friends in this movie. And it is quite dark, but without sort of battering you over the head with its darkness.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of not sugarcoating things. And it feels really true to life because of that.
Mm.
And that's, you know, borne out in the script, which has, you know, brilliantly well-observed slang. And, you know, just I'm amazed that Lukas Moodysson, who obviously was a man in his 30s, managed to write these two teenage girls who feel, at least to me, and obviously I was never a teenage girl,
no.
But, you know, at least to me, feel very, very real.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's really impressive how he manages to do that.
Mm.
And that they're two totally different characters as well. I think, though, my favourite character in the film might be Agnes' dad, because unlike most parents in teen movies, he's just brilliantly written. He's just this guy who genuinely loves his daughter to distraction, but kind of just doesn't quite get it. He's just trying to be the best dad that he can be. And, you know, rather than making him either crap or over-attentive or all, just makes him a real guy.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's judgments like that right throughout the film that just managed to nail kind of every little moment. And that's what's so great about it. It's just like the little moments that it captures. And I singled one out when I wrote about 50 great movie moments on the blog. And I singled out the second kiss, the last indeed kiss that Agnes and Aylin had in the film, where they're just kind of sitting in the back of the car, and they're talking about running away to Stockholm together. And it's really, really cheesy, but somehow it completely works. You know, they've got Foreigner on the radio, and they're talking about going to Stockholm, and Aylin just turns to Agnes and goes, "We're so fucking cool." And they just make out. And it's like, it's just, it's one of the great movie kisses for me. It's like, just a kind of a really powerful moment. And again, really kind of a small moment as well. I love that. And just kind of a last thing to say, aside from the fact that it has a perfect ending, is that, you know, too many movies have sequels now, obviously. Yeah.
You know, obviously. Like,
and too many sequels are just the same thing again.
The same thing again, or they just are a piece of crap.
But I really want to see a sequel to this movie because they're, you know, 14 and 16 here. This movie's 12 years old now. I'm really interested in where they are now. You know, and that's because the characters are so well written and so well played by Rebecca Lillieberg and Alexander Dahlstrom that you're genuinely interested in them, not just whether they'll get together or any of that, but just as people. They're just really interesting characters. I really want to see how they're getting on.
Definitely. I mean, I really would like to check this out. I've heard about it, just, you know, along with everything else, just haven't found it to watch it. And
Well, I'll tell you this, Google video. No, it's there.
Yeah, okay.
Go watch it.
I'll go watch it on there.
I'll pop your review up on the site.
So, obviously, this is a 5 out of 5 movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's getting dangerously near to being in my top 10, actually.
Of all time?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, my number one, and this is one of my all-time favourite movies ever, and it's something that I discovered again recently in the last few years because I had seen it when I was a lot younger, but I didn't obviously understand it that well. It's a film by Jim Jarmusch, and it's from 1986, and it's called Down by Law. And I can't even just begin to describe this movie. I just absolutely just love it. And I just think it's a movie that you could just, you need to just go into and just watch because you're just in for just an interesting ride, I guess, and just some amazing performances from the leads, and it's just such a great film. It's so hard for me to describe because I just love it that much, and I just don't want to be gushing about it. I guess.
That's kind of what this is for.
Hey, yeah, I know. I guess just to break it down as easy as possible, it's about three guys. They're in a Louisiana prison, and they basically end up having a journey together, but they're three completely different men. They're like all opposites of each other, and they've got these distinct personalities, and you kind of see them before they're in the prison, and then as they get into prison and how their actual relationships form together because they're in the same cell. It stars one of my favourite musicians, Tom Waits. It also stars John Laurie and Roberto Benigni. which I kind of butchered his name, even though I'm Italian and I should be able to pronounce it. They're the three main guys. And there's just some scenes in this movie that are just so absolutely fantastic. They would be like amongst my favorite movie scenes of all time. I guess Jim Jarmusch is a kind of a love him or hate him kind of director, because I know people that absolutely just don't like him and other people absolutely worship him. But I think if you're going to give any of his movies a shot, I would just say go with this one, definitely. Have you seen it, or have you seen it recently?
I haven't seen a lot of Jarmusch. I need to see Dead Man again, certainly. Mm. Because I remember not liking it, but again, that was some time ago. And I've seen Broken Flowers, which I really liked, actually. But otherwise, I don't think I've seen any of his... Oh, no, I saw Night on Earth, which is a massive stinker. I didn't like that at all. But, I mean, this definitely sounds like a really interesting film, and I do need to discover more of his stuff, because he's clearly an important filmmaker.
Well, this one, hands down for me, even though I haven't seen all of Jim Jarmusch's films, I mean, hands down, this would be the one I say, just watch this. It's part, like, drama, it's part crime, it's part comedy, and it's just all enjoyable for me.
Is it a little more mainstream, perhaps, than some of his other stuff?
Well, not really. I mean, this is... I think one of the reasons that I ended up seeing this movie or hearing about it in the first place is because of my dad being a big Roberto Benigni fan, and he used to watch this all the time, and there were some scenes he just wanted to watch over and over again, and I don't blame him because they're that fantastic. And as I got older, I wanted to watch it again, and I managed to, I found it on DVD for him, so I bought it, I think it was for his birthday. And, I basically rediscovered it, and it just easily, became one of my favourite movies ever.
It's just that the thing that's kind of often levelled at Jarmusch is that he's, very pretentious as a filmmaker. This is kind of a bit of a departure from that.
Well, I would not call this movie pretentious at all. No way. And
it's certainly a charge that I've, in my limited experience found. Might stick, but I'll definitely, I'll keep a lookout for this one.
Yeah,
I know it's out on disc here. I'll keep a lookout for a decent price on it.
But I would say just watch it, and the soundtrack, because you've got some musicians there. It's fantastic as well, and really just great performances, and just a strange chemistry between these three guys, and it shouldn't work, but it does. So. Yeah, I mean, this is, 5 out of 5, hands down. Just
Since I've got a Tom Waits fan here, where do I start with Tom Waits? Because I want to discover him.
When I first started listening to his music, I went with the album Rain Dogs.
Okay.
Which is probably one of his probably better known albums, but that's where I started, and that's where I would, recommend people to start.
Cool, because it's such a big catalogue, I've been wondering where to start.
Yeah, well, that's something I noticed, and I went with Rain Dogs, so, yeah. And then since then I just, tracked down most of his other stuff, and really enjoy Mr. Waits.
Well, I will keep an eye out for both Rain Dogs and Down by Law then.
Yeah, so, that basically wraps up our show. We've discussed 10 films that... probably a lot of people haven't seen, and why haven't you seen them? Go and see them. And if you don't like them, bad luck. That's the risk you take.
Well, certainly on mine, anyone should feel free to drop me an email, let me know what you thought of these films. I'll pop something up on the site if you like as well. So that's sam@24fps.org.uk. With any feedback on this.
Yeah. So hopefully we get some kind of feedback. That's about it. I'd like to thank you very much for staying up and joining me for the podcast finally, because this is something we talked about like at the start of the year, and then things just came up and it's like, oh, we're going to do it now. So,
No worries. It's a pleasure
to talk to you. I'm sure listeners enjoy, the different accents, with the Aussie accent and the British accent.
Yeah, two accents that the Americans won't understand.
I'll probably get written, what are you guys talking about? I don't understand you. I don't think we're that difficult to understand. I should hope not. Well, until next time, I've been Super and Sam has been English.
Thanks, Marcy.
All right, see you later. Inside